Once again, this is KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon. Time now for the Tuesday talk show here at 1270 Radio, 99.7 FM. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. We'll take them then. If you want to jot the number down now, it's 541-472-1270. And remember, when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you hear your question or comment to our guest. And we'll get to our guest in just a moment. But a couple of things, first of all, to start this program. The county commissioners were originally scheduled to appear here today, but Friday at 12:53 p.m. received an email said, "Hello, I'm so sorry to do this to you without much notice. The commissioners are holding interviews for the county treasurer next Tuesday at 10 a.m. They will not be able to attend KAJO. Thank you." And that's from Cassie Austin, Administrative Supervisor, Board of the Commissioners. Yeah, that really gives us an opportunity to talk about something that's been on everybody's mind since about last Thursday, and that's the fire situation here locally. I'm going to start the program today by reading to you a post from the Rural Metro Facebook page, and we'll start here. It's dated Thursday, the 17th of July at 5:06 p.m. "An initial report to Grants Pass 911 of black smoke and the smell of burning plastic quickly escalated to fire involving a home and multiple vehicles, RVs, and other excessive yard accumulation at the end of Board Shady Creek Road off Summit Loop. The first arriving battalion chief from Rural Metro found an apocalyptic war zone of multiple items on fire, prompting the mobilization of a four-alarm response that brought in engine companies from a dozen departments across Josephine and Jackson counties. Soon faced with the swirling winds in the saddle of Luther Divide that pushed the fire in different directions, the fire jumped a ravine and quickly climbed the southwest slope of Bluey Mountain." That was posted by Rural Metro, and we'll get back to that in a moment or two. The next day, we received a news release from the president of the Josephine County Rural Fire Protection District. The Board Shanty Fire, which ignited July 17th of 2025 in the wildland-urban interface south of Grants Pass, underscores the critical importance of coordinated fire protection and emergency response in Josephine County. This incident illustrates why the Josephine County Rural Protection Fire District Board of Directors voted unanimously to enter into a formal agreement with Rural Metro Fire Department Incorporated on July 7th of 2025. And thanks to a fast and aggressive initial attack by Rural Metro Fire, working in seamless coordination with the Oregon Department of Forestry, the fire was rapidly engaged, helping to prevent greater spread and potential damage. That was from Mark Jones, the president of the Josephine County Rural Fire Protection District. All right. Now, welcome to the microphones of KAJO. First of all, from Rural Metro Fire, Austin Prince, and then Mark Jones from the Fire Protection District. Gentlemen, welcome to the microphones of KAJO. Thank you for joining us today. And Austin, I guess we'll start with you. First of all, kudos to the fast response and the professionalism seen up on Board Shanty Thursday afternoon. Can you recap some of those things and what has transpired since then?
Yeah, well, thanks again, Chuck, for the invite for us to give some feedback and maybe fill in some gaps for those people that have obviously seen this fire from its onset till today. Yeah, the original call that mobilized a standard response that we normally give to a wildfire that occurs during the summer quickly changed upon the arrival of the first in units to what they actually saw, involving a large amount of vehicles, RVs, a house, and other types of accumulation in the yard. And with that particular location, the wind conditions are very unpredictable up in the Luther Divide. So a lot of thoughts that went into it were based off of history, of knowledge of the area, et cetera. We knew that we had the potential for a very catastrophic event. Now, of course, the response is a joint effort by not only us in the Department of Forestry, but a number of other fire agencies, including the City of Grants Pass. So with us all coming together with the same mission in mind, we put the normal response into full effect and quickly escalated it to pull in additional help.
All right. Well, let me run this down, because automatic aid partnerships with agencies, including the Grants Pass Fire Department, the Illinois Valley Fire District, the Applegate Valley Fire District, the Williams Rural Fire Protection District, and many others. Is that fair, or are there others that we need today?
Can we
get them all?
That covers the majority of the folks that are around the county and or adjoining county over in Jackson on a regular daily basis. We also were lucky to have the Grizzly Fire Complex that had been in place out in the Applegate ever since the lightning storm that came through a couple weeks ago, that had a lot of stuff in a ready state of response, that a phone call basically from Department of Forestry over to the base camp got a lot of stuff headed our way really quick, and that included the aircraft. So we benefited in that regard. But that pretty much covers a lot of the first initial attack period that first day.
Okay, so Rural Metro really the first on the scene. Kudos to your crews and professionalism that we saw up there. Any advice for people living in that area? And incidentally, I just picked up the latest release. The level one evacuation notices do remain in effect, but containment's up to 20%, and they're right now transitioning from that Command Team 3 to another command team from ODF. So all that's good news coming from that situation up there. Is that a fair assessment of what we're looking at right now?
Yeah, the progress that the team has made over just a very short amount of time for that many acres, 469 acres, while containment is a technicality of work being done in a smoldering, hot ground, hot tree stumps, distance from the fire line inward to the center of the fire, containment does take time. While you don't see smoke, you don't see active fire growth, people have a tendency to think it's over completely, but there's still lots of firefighters on the line, and they will stay there for quite some time because of the due diligence that's needed to ensure that no spark will pop up and flow out of the fire area and start a new blaze.
Quite frankly, I'm surprised that the amount of smoke that we've seen in the last couple of days, almost none visible, at least from this side of the valley, because I know that fire could probably really smoke well until the rains return.
Yeah, that particular location, due to the fact that Board Shanty comes up from two different directions, from the north and the south, but doesn't connect in the middle, which is characteristic, unfortunately, of a lot of our road systems in Josephine County, where you have the same name, but you don't have a connecting point piece in the middle, creates a very potentially dangerous situation for escape, access, egress, et cetera. And the fact that this particular area has had a reputation for those of us that have been in the fire service for a length of time here, knowing that that particular location could be quite catastrophic. And if you were going to select a direction of travel for that fire to go, going basically east up the slope of Mount Bluey, it was the best scenario we could hope for. So in the end, that is really what I think had a lot to do with the quick containment, the fact that we are seeing this status of that size fire in such a short amount of time.
All right. After the initial response from Rural Metro Fire, your units really stayed involved with structure protection. Is that right? Is that still happening?
Well, we actually saw the results of the first night through the first evening really change the necessity of structure protection necessarily with all of the resources we'd pulled in to assist us. Based on the fact of the progress that was being made both from aircraft and ground troops, that structure protection in that area was as lower level of concern as it might have been during the first couple of hours of that fire. And that once we actually got to the transition phase the next morning with the team out there at the Grizzly Complex, we were able to get a lot of those folks released and get them sent back home for relief, because they have to be ready for the next incident that might occur in the community, and those replacement crews were there to, take over all that.
It appears to me that we've had a catastrophe avoided here. I've not heard of any structures being lost. Have you?
Well, at the origin location, we do have the loss of one.
The loss of that one, the initial one.
Correct.
All right. Just a personal footnote here, because some of you may have noticed that this radio station, the FM signal went off the air because we do, up on Mount Bluey, have that communication center that also controls two of our FM signals coming off of there. And we're relatively safe. We understand the fire came about 100 feet away from that installation.
That particular tower and installation up there is a critical communication piece for a lot of things. I believe the Sheriff's Department is up there as well. So it had a high value of interest that we needed to make sure was protected. And you could tell just by the wildfire commanding side of things, because we split the incident into two different command positions, one's for structural protection and the other's for containment of the wildland. They recognized the need. They put a lot of energy and resources to that tower, including a lot of retardant was dropped in that area.
Everything is a different color up there right
now. It is all pink. And it'll probably stay that way until the rains fall. But yeah, that was known to be one of the most important infrastructure pieces that we had to be concerned with.
All right. Well, kudos to all involved in that.
Yes.
And I didn't mean to certainly ignore Mark Jones here with the new fire protection district. You immediately almost put out that news release praising what was going on and emphasizing the importance of the communication between all of the agencies and the cooperative situation between those. Tell me about the fire protection district now and what this fire really brought to light.
The fire protection district, this is an area of Josephine County that has been deemed unprotected or underserved for many years. In 71, the commissioners at the time then started, looking into the process of creating a fire district, and it never amounted to anything. So here we are 54 years later, and we finally have a fire district in this area. The board was elected in May, and we were all sworn in on July 1st. So here we are.
Brand new to the job.
Brand new to it, and we get a big fire in our area. One of the first things the board wanted to make sure was that the service level that the citizens of this area were getting from Rural Metro, that level of service, we wanted to make sure that didn't go away. So the board unanimously voted to sign an agreement with Rural Metro for them to continue service in the way that they were providing service for the past basically 47 years. And that made sure that they were here to be on scene, to get up there and get on that fire right away like they did.
All right. Now, I'm under the impression right now that there's no funding for the fire protection district right now. Am I correct in that, or is there something there?
You're correct. Currently, there is no tax base. That's the district was able to be formed under a state statute without a tax base, without a vote of the citizens, because there was no money involved. So currently there is no tax base. The district right now is trying to gather some things to get our legs under us so we can take off running. But there was literally nothing in place at the time that we were sworn in. There is money that was secured from state legislation back in 2020. That money was set aside, at the time it was $1.5 million, set aside to form a fire district. And in 2021, there was a ballot measure for the voters that would have formed a fire district with a tax base. And because it had a tax base attached to it, it went to the voters. And in 2021, that was voted down. So here we are 4 years later with a district, however, no tax base.
So you two are pretty good friends right now.
Right.
you and Austin working together here. What does this the district and the relationship with Rural Metro mean to the people out there in terms of fire protection right now?
Well, right now it means that they will continue to receive the all-hazard fire protection and emergency services that they've been receiving for the past decades.
All right, and that's with Rural Metro. And Rural Metro is a subscription service. Is that right, Austin? That's a subscription service?
Yes, that is correct.
So basically what people have been paying doesn't change.
Correct.
So everything is as it was, except that we may have, just a little more or about the same protection coverage right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Currently, the levels have remained the same of what they've had before, yeah. There's been no change in the level of service provided.
All right. What advice do we pass out to the people there? Is there going to be a measure put before the voters for a tax base for the fire protection district? Or what the future lies? I think, look into your crystal ball, Hill, both of you.
Yeah. So that would be up to the board to vote on. Traditionally, fire districts do have a tax base. That's just how they the revenue stream for the special districts. It is a taxing district that was formed, so at some point in time there will be needing to be some sort of revenue stream for the district to get up and run on its own. What that looks like right now is unknown. It's going to be up to the board. It's going to be up to the citizens of the community that we serve, and we'll have to go from there. When the time comes, we'll put stuff out and more information. Right now, we don't have a website. We don't have we finally got a P.O. box, and we're working on a phone number. We don't have an office yet.
So you said up and running. I think up and walking might be a...
Right. Up and walking would be the first step, yeah. But as we grow, right now we're meeting every week, currently on Mondays. And this is to get all those things in place, policies, procedures, which need to get some staffing. We do need to find a fire chief, an interim fire chief. It is state statute requires that we shall have a fire chief. So we're looking for that right now and a way to do that, whether it be a contract employee or hired, or we use somebody from SDAO.
That takes funds.
Right. Mm-hmm. That takes funds. We were given a budget for this year. The budget committee was formed when the commissioners had control of the district. And in that budget committee, we were allotted $325,000 of that those funds that are there for this year's budget. So it is it'll help us to get those things like an office space and office equipment and maybe an administrative person to help with all the.
So do you even have an office space right now?
We do not.
You have a post office box.
We've got the post office box, so we started.
Okay. If people want to communicate, how best to do that? Is it send a letter? What?
Yeah, so, currently we don't have a phone. We're working on that. We do have, we got a YouTube site put up so that we could show our meetings so they can, next meeting will be able to be live streamed. We weren't able to get it on this one, but the meeting was recorded and it is available on YouTube at JCRFPD. So youtube.com/@JCRFPD, and you can see our meetings on there.
Okay, we'll put that out several times today.
Yeah. other than that, the P.O. Box works. We do have an email address right now. It's jocorfpd@gmail.com. So they can contact us through that as well.
All right, look into your crystal ball here as this board continues to meet. Do you foresee a tax request going before the public this year?
Me personally, no. If it did, it would have to be in November, and I don't believe that things will be put in place in
That'd
time
be pretty
for
quick.
That. It would be, yeah. So I couldn't see it happening this year for me personally. I mean, again, it's a decision that the board would have to make. If the board decides to go that route and get it in a November ballot, then it may. But I can't see that happening personally because, again, we don't even have an office yet.
All right. Gentlemen, we'll see if we can't get you an office here. But right now, we're just going to take a deep breath and continue. We'll be back right after this important message.
A primary care.
Welcome back, Tuesday Talk Show in Progress. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, our guest today from Rural Metro Fire Department is Austin Prince, and from the new fire protection district in the county is President Mark Jones. Gentlemen, once again, welcome. Glad to have you here. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedules here. Mark just related to us some of the history behind that fire protection district. Austin, what does that mean to Rural Metro, this fire protection district, and the agreement that you have going now?
Well, going back at least the 37 years I've been here working for the department and protecting the community, I've known from the start that the concept of private fire protection through subscription was supposed to be a temporary fill gap for the lack of a fire district, because the fire districts exist everywhere else inside this county and beyond in a very traditional sense, as Mark has outlined. We just happen to be a very unique situation. We're actually very unique in regards to the whole state. in the way that it's designed. However, it's not been unsuccessful. We've done a very good job getting it to where it is, and we've got the backing of an organization that's national that understands the need for community service and community protection. For those of us that actually work here and live here and been here our entire lives, they want to support us. And that could include anything that might move us towards this fire district. So they're supportive of any venture that does keep us continuing service delivery. So we see it from the organization sees it from a long-term investment in some form, whether that be through a contractual agreement that's currently in place to where we see it in the long run. Employees are also feeling that same feeling of support. So I'd say that we continue to be in support of this district and the effort that's going to be faced with the community. But I do believe, as Mark alluded, that we're dealing with a time frame here of when do you actually go to the voters and ask for that monetary support. It's going to take a lot of time in marketing. There's going to have to be some in-depth discussions so that the people know what they're getting into. And a lot of folks still actually appreciate the current model that we've been doing through contract membership. So it's a challenge, and it's going to be interesting work for Mark and his team. But we're right there with them, and we want to make sure that the community understands is that we're not going anywhere. We're sticking by every year that we've been here, and the infrastructure we've developed, the invested infrastructure, the fact that we, like I said, we all live here. We work here. We live here. It's our home that we're protecting as well. It just happens to be that Rural Metro is the venue by which to make that happen. So,
What areas does Rural Metro really cover right now? Is it countywide for the most part?
No, that's a misused word through the years' worth of discussing this topic. As a lot of times there will be the statement made that this is some kind of a countywide fire district. It is a little bit misleading, I think, with the name that's currently being used by it being Josephine County Rural Fire Protection District. There's this impression that means it's going to take over Illinois Valley, Williams, Wolf Creek, et cetera. But in reality, it is a very specific geographical area outside the city limits of Grants Pass that butts up to those other districts that has been the service area for us for those 45 years. And it isn't countywide. It is specific to the service area that we have been serving in all this time.
Yeah, it doesn't take – it borders Illinois Valley Fire District. It borders Wolf Creek Fire District and borders now Applegate Fire District. And for those that aren't aware, there was an area out in the Murphy area that was annexed by Applegate Fire prior to this district being finalized. So that new border line – basically, Applegate Fire now has up to the Murphy area, and then our district borders them, Illinois Valley, and Wolf Creek to the top, to the front, and then, of course, the Jackson County line.
So you're filling in the middle of all of those other fire districts here.
Correct.
And through a contract with Rural Metro. Is there a time in the future, 5-6 years down the road, where you two would be competitors, or no?
No, I wouldn't see it as competitors. The issue that the district has is we have zero infrastructure. Rural Metro has all that infrastructure in place already. They have the fire stations, the apparatus, and the personnel. My personal opinion, and again, this isn't the board's decision, but my personal opinion would be to utilize Rural Metro's infrastructure, whether that be a master contract with them, or eventually doing that master contract and eventually buying them out over the years. That way it would, you know, say however many years down the road, at one point the district would start owning fire stations and things like that of their own. Whether that's the direction the board wants to go or not, I don't know. But my personal opinion, that infrastructure is there. The district should utilize it.
All right, they've already invested in that infrastructure, and kudos to the infrastructure.
Yes, it's been saving grace for this county.
I've been in the newsroom here for more years than I care to, and when we hear sirens go by, the one question I ask is, what color are the trucks?
Right.
So I know, and more often than not, it's Rural Metro going by. It's either red or green, one of the two.
Right.
So that's always reassuring to know that we've got professionals on both sides. Now, in the future, you said that you've got to have a fire chief. How does that work with working with Austin Prince? Will they be coordinating together, or
the way ORS 478 states in there with the formation of a fire district, it says that the district shall hire or appoint a fire chief. So when it says shall, that means we have to have one. So unfortunately, since there's a contract with Rural Metro between the district and Rural Metro, utilizing their chief is a conflict of interest.
So technically, we're probably talking Mr. Prince here.
Currently, it's Chief Nelson.
Yeah. Oh, Chief Nelson?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
so. I'm one step below him.
Oh.
I'm the ops chief. He's the fire chief. Yeah.
So you're the working guy.
I'm the guy. Yeah, well, yeah, more or less.
All right. So in that, you have to have that separation. So we would need a fire chief that then deals with the workings of the district, and then he would be working with the chief of Rural Metro, since that puts that separation between the contract and the or between the contractee and the contractor. So that fire chief would be that person in between.
Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. I want to ask you to just hold on here. It's time for a little break here on KHAO Radio. I will return with more of the Tuesday Talk Show right after the top of the hour news here at 1270 Radio. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. The number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest today is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment direct to our guest today. From Rural Metro Fire, Austin Prince, and from the new Fire Protection District, let's see, Mark Jones. Names will get me every time. In the meantime, though, I just want to bring you up to date on Shad Creek Fire here. Firefighters are working that 469 board shanty fire south of Grants Pass, pushed to containment to 20% and cooled the perimeter 200 feet inside the fire's edge. And the command is in transition right now, going from that command three team to another lower local team. That'll be happening by tomorrow morning. In the meantime, here we've got fire people in studio here. So whatever questions you have, send us along. Now, in the meantime, we've been talking with both Austin Prince of Rural Metro and Mark Jones of the Josephine County Rural Fire Protection District. Gentlemen, we've been talking about funding and what's going to happen. What's that really mean to the person out there in terms of if I live in rural Josephine County, what about my fire protection? What is happening right now, both with Rural Metro and the district? How's that going to affect me personally, and what should I be looking for? Let me turn your microphones on.
Sorry.
Operator error.
So right now there is no change to what it was like a month ago. If you're a Rural Metro subscriber, you're continuing to be a Rural Metro subscriber. There is no tax base for the fire district. So your fire protection services have remained the same. That was the agreement that we signed with Rural Metro. So that way they're not seeing any changes at all out there right now. So the mutual aid and automatic aid that other fire districts counted on, that's still in place. Rural Metro is doing an amazing job. They've done an amazing job for 47 years in this area. Not all as Rural Metro, obviously. I think Valley Fire before that. So the citizens won't see any change at this time.
All right. Is it going to improve soon? We'll throw this question over to Austin here. But Rural Metro has a great reputation right now for providing that service. So is it adequate right now? Are you up to the level that you'd like to be?
Well, obviously, over the course of time, everything has built up, and it takes time to build an organization up to where it is today. It would definitely benefit to be better, bigger, more of a lot of things, specifically employees. I would say just about every working force out there struggles with employee retention, and we're no different. And then, of course, the specialized skill sets that come with the individuals that do this work in an all-hazard capacity. Takes time to develop, and we all struggle from trying to retain them because there's a lot of movement. We're not the only game in town, if you will. So we have fire departments around us that are also seeking qualified and experienced people that a lot of times have been developed by us. We've been pretty much a stepping stone, if you will, of employees that come through our program and then go on to work in other fire departments in different communities. Be that as it may, if I was going to pick any kind of forecasted improvement, it would be the ability for us to retain the people, mostly local employed, local resident folks that want to come to work for us. And we take them in from ground zero. We take them with no background and experience, and we build that into their lifestyle and put them out on the line. So it's just a matter of building up that level. I think our number of stations are pretty, I guess, saturated, if you will, in the area. There might be a need for an additional station at some point, maybe in the Hugo area. But for the most part, we've got the infrastructure well established. We're sitting right around 70 employees, and I'd like to see a bit more of that. We've got a fairly decent equipment and apparatus infrastructure. We probably have close to 30 fire apparatus, all maintained by an in-house fleet mechanic shop. And so there's a lot of really good things that could say that this is very, similar to a fire district. If this wasn't a private company, you would not really know the difference. There really is no real significant difference with the exception of the funding mechanism.
Yeah, right. They operate the same way as your regular fire district fire departments, and they are held to the same standards. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me see if I heard you correctly here. Say I'm a young man. I'm healthy, and I'm just out of high school, and I just turned 21 years old, and I'm looking for a career. If I went to Rural Metro and I have no experience in firefighting, you'll take that person, I assume, after an interview process, because I know it takes a certain individual to be able to do that sort of thing, but you'll train them from the ground up?
Yeah.
Is that what I heard?
That is exactly our model. It's how I got started. I mean, I came right out of Hidden Valley High School after graduating and went in and knocked on the door and filled out an application. So that's been our motto from the very beginning, and it continues to be that way. Now, I want to do also add in there that it's not just men. I mean, we definitely encourage women that want to participate in this line of work as well to apply. And we do it every fall. So here near the end of summer, probably late August, early September, there's going to be a lot of advertising for our next wave of recruitment, which we will take people with, you know, the basic minimums of being 18 years of age and older and a diploma, high school or GED, some proof of general education. And then we put them through some processes that include physical fitness tests, interviews, et cetera, background check, and all the good stuff. And then we make a selection out of the folks that we have heard from that make the cut, if you will. And we put them right into the basic level training and build them from there. And it's a standard op that has developed almost every firefighter that's come through our doors.
All right. Well, that's me. And another opportunity that well, I certainly wasn't aware that you took them from ground from zero to firefighter level. Mm-hmm. So, that one just threw me for a loop. I didn't realize that you were also a training organization.
It's a joint training effort on the regional level, which is basically two counties. We've got Josephine and Jackson County collaborating with instructors, facilities, but the curriculum is the same. It doesn't matter where you go, the curriculum is the same. And so when we do have a group of folks, if we say on average take 10 people out of the group of applicants, we are combining those 10 with firefighters from other fire departments around the area that are doing the same thing. Some departments will require that you come to work for them having been already trained. I'll take the City of Grants Pass as an example. It's a great place to take a person who has already been trained, but they're looking for that full-time employment right out the door and get right plugged in. That is its own program. We just happen to be the one that brings people off the street and builds them from ground up.
All right. How long from the time that you say yes to a young applicant to the time that you put them out on a truck?
Well, after they get done with the academy and a few of the required minimum training requirements, then they get put onto a shift as a extra. They're not part of the minimum staffing. So that gets them frontline experience as a student, if you will, on the engine company with the senior members. And then after another series of training requirements, then they can be released to start working their own shifts with the crews. We're looking at a timeline that varies depending on the motivation of the individual, that you could see 3 to 4 months is the earliest, up to the probationary period, which is a full year.
Mm-hmm.
But that is kind of based on the availability, keeping in mind that these are not full-time employees. When you come in, you're paid on an hourly wage, but you're part-time. So it has to fit around a schedule that they come to us with, whether that has another job, family, you know, other types of obligations that come with your lifestyle. But it is not a surprise that when you do start with the fire service, that it is a very demanding requirement. It's not a casual mm-hmm. event. You can't come in kind of like half into it and half not. You really have to put in the energy. And so it takes a lot of commitment.
I was going to say the interview process must be pretty significant, and you look at probably a lot of different psychological situations.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of people won't really understand the intensity of the job because it doesn't happen daily. But when you take the fire that we had up here on board Shanty a couple days ago, that would be considered an extreme. That was a lot of sensory overload for the average general public would not have been able to really comprehend and manage the intensity of that event. So we have to get our folks that are planning to be firefighters through that as well. So it does take a little bit of work. It's not for everybody. But we definitely encourage anyone with an interest to come in and give it a shot, because I don't think any of us that ever did start wondered if this was going to be the right thing for our personalities. But it fits the mold for a lot of folks. And we're proud to see them become public servants in that way.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate those efforts, and just know that there's another avenue there for young people to find the suitable career for themselves. Mark, I didn't mean to get away from you.
That's fine.
So I want to get back to the Fire Protection District here that is relatively new. And, of course, you emphasized in your press release on the day after the Board Shanty fire broke out, the importance of the mutual aid situation that everything has here. Every department locally was involved in that Board Shanty fire. How big is that, and does that continue? Are there problems there with any of them?
No, the mutual aid automatic aid system is extremely beneficial to the county, and not only ours but Jackson County and everywhere. Every department throughout the nation has some sort of mutual aid, automatic aid agreement with neighboring departments. And that's how you get more manpower and more equipment on scenes of these fires. Like, you know, Austin mentioned earlier that they went to a fourth alarm on the, you know, so each alarm has a different set of equipment and personnel attached to it. So that's how when your situation becomes it's necessary for more equipment and personnel on a scene. You know, the scene grows too big, like the Port Shanty did. You got to get more people there, so you do different alarms, and that starts initiating that mutual aid and automatic aid. And so, the Josephine County Rural Fire Protection District, being under a service agreement with Rural Metro, allows that automatic aid and mutual aid to continue with all of our neighboring districts.
All right, Austin, you're vigorously nodding your head here.
It's a lot of work that brought us to where we are today. I'd say prior to 1992, the program wasn't as robust as it is today. And some of my predecessors from the organization, my recently retired chief, Chief Phil Turnbull, was instrumental in building a lot of those relationships with the departments in both counties, and served as the kind of the leader to say, this is the right thing to do for the people. This isn't because it's ego-driven, I live inside my boundaries and I don't help anyone else but me. It's just the right thing to do. And you see it on a regular basis here. In fact, we've become somewhat of a cute little example, if you will, to the rest of the state. Our neighboring areas will contact us or come in and talk about, hey, how did you guys build these relationships? It isn't easy. It doesn't happen overnight. You can't just roll right in and say, I want mutual aid with all the neighboring departments, if you have not gone through a process. It took us about 12 years of proving ourselves to actually get to be a signer of the agreement. And it has to be signed. Everybody has to sign an agreement, because you can't just put the lives of your people, your employees, and the property that you're sworn to protect in the hands of somebody that hasn't actually been proven. So it's taken time. And that is definitely something that we want to maintain and continue. And it also isn't, as some people think, like the broken arrow type of call out. You don't just go to the equivalent of fourth alarm thinking that every fire truck in a 10-mile radius is all coming to help this one location. It's a select extraction of apparatus and equipment from each one of these neighboring departments so that they don't leave their area unprotected. You would think, okay, well, how come every fire truck in Grants Pass city limits wasn't up on that fire? They're closer. But you have to realize that one fire or one event does not make everything else stop. Right. The rest of emergencies don't stop.
All right, let me see if I can simplify that just a little bit. So once Rural Metro pulls their units up to the Board Chaney Creek Fire, all right, Illinois Valley might pull their units in a little closer to cover some of Rural Metro's areas, and that's how that works. So the Illinois Valley Fire District would help. Wolf Creek Fire District would move engines around so that everybody remains protected, but there is ample backup and ample attack force on the main fire.
Yeah, it's an interesting inside perspective that the general public does not know. The daily number of emergencies. Now, it's a little bit more familiar out there to folks that follow like the social media scanner ticker tape that just constantly puts out all these different events. They're not putting everything out because not everything's that important to the general public. But it is a constant state of emergency in Josephine County, around Grants Pass, every day, all day. And so when one fire comes in like that, that is a major draw of emergencies, and I'll use another example of the nighttime glow float that we had down on the river. Mm-hmm. That's another big popular event that everybody's fixated on. It is a huge draw of emergency service responders to handle things of certain magnitude. Well, you can't do that on a very small number of resources at any given time. It takes a village, if you will. Yeah. And that is – the village is supplemented and supported by the neighbors. So when we do have an event like Board Chaney or any other major incident, those neighboring departments will bring in either to the scene, depending on how it's arranged, or they'll come in and they'll cover and provide the services to our contracted members, for example. You might end up, while we're on that fire, have an event that occurs in, say, Merlin, and it might be handled by a fire truck from Medford. We've had, you know, Ashland Fire Department fire trucks sitting in our stations ready to take the next emergency happening in the Grants Pass area. So it's a very integrated system that you can't just do it without a lot of preparatory work.
Is there a lines of communication must be incredible here. Is there a clearinghouse? Is there one place where everything goes through?
Well, our 911 center is, and there's two centers between Josephine and Jackson County, and yes, they do communicate our needs through the whoever is responsible for sending. But at the level that I work at, say chief level, we also have a very robust communication system within the fire chiefs of all the departments. The agreement that we have between both counties pretty much pulls in 20 fire departments all in the same agreement. So we all communicate regularly. So if we know something's brewing in the hills above Ashland, for example, I'm going to know about it because I'm in the loop. And the chief of IV Fire is going to know about it because he's in the loop. So that gives our time to prep our people. When the call comes in, we're out the door.
Yeah. All right. Is the Fire Chiefs Association talking about.
And is the new fire district part of that?
Basically, yes.
Well, basically, because I know you're contracted with Rural Metro.
So right now, because of the agreement with Rural Metro, we are part of that, mm-hmm. Yes.
Just automatically.
Automatically, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's, you know, the Rogue Valley Fire Chiefs Association is what he was discussing about, all those fire chiefs that are all on the same page and working together. It's a very important piece of the puzzle.
All right, and very important piece of part of just peace of mind here for people who have chosen to live here in the Rogue Valley with all of its beauty and all of its inherent danger that you take for granted here a little bit. We're going to continue with this right after this important message.
Clean.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest today from Rural Metro Fire Department, it's Austin Prince, and from the Josephine County Rural Fire Protection District, President Mark Jones here to ask your questions about fire protection around and really what has happened locally and what you can expect to have happen and how you can sleep safely at night, sleep soundly at night, knowing that you're protected. What kind of advice do you give people who call in right now? And I'm going to throw this first to Austin and then back to Mark. But what kind of advice are you giving to people right now, in particular because of these hot temperatures, hot, dry situations? This is fire country, isn't it?
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah, anybody that's lived here for any length of time knows that we're not in a non-fire hazard zone. It's just the reality. It comes with the weather. It comes with the vegetation, the slope, and a remarkably increased amount of wind that I think we've been seeing lately that normally would be just an afternoon event. So we have the makings almost daily during the summer right now of the potential of catastrophic events. When we look for any opportunity to tie in a past event, whether it happened earlier this morning or yesterday or last week, that had an outcome that everybody was like, oh, there was an emergency, we try to tie it into some sort of a public education campaign. May not be a whole lot, but it's enough to say, here's what you could do to avoid this in the future. And right now, it comes with a lot of things. It could be the fact you need to make sure your vehicle is in as great a mechanical condition as possible, because vehicles are a huge contributor to roadside fires. It might be the regulated use activities that Department of Forestry regulates this time of year, which right now we're in high. So a common question that all fire departments get is, hey, how long can I mow until I have to shut off my mower to mow my grass? Well, mowing of the lawn that's green and irrigated is not restricted, but if you have a dry field that you're wanting to mow, you have to do it before 10 o'clock in the morning. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't have the potential of sparking a fire at 9:30 in the morning. Dry conditions, a mower hitting a blade hitting a rock can still start a fire. So it's about common sense, being aware of your surroundings, recognizing the potential that we have in this area, and just making good, solid decisions as part of the general public going about their day. And every fire event or incident that we have is usually tied to something that could have been prevented. So it's just a matter of making sure people are aware of that. To us, having the ability to highlight every possible way something can happen would virtually be impossible. Yeah. And about the time we think we've hit all the key ones, then something new will come along and it'll just throw us for a loop. And well, we didn't expect that to be a fire starting problem, but it is. So our advice is that just have to make people very aware that their conditions and their activities in those conditions are usually some tie together as to how catastrophic events occur.
All right. I want to go back over to here to Mark here because we are coming down short on time. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes here left in the program. Mark, once again, I know that you're a brand new situation right here with the Fire Protection District. Congratulations on being president, or condolences, either one.
haven't figured it out.
And you do have you have a post office box now. Still looking for an office
and
an email address. So how do people really contact the Fire Protection District? Want to hit that one more time here?
So right now, currently, the best way to get a hold of us is through the email account. It's jocorfpd@gmail.com. So jocorfpd@gmail.com. That's the best way right now. We also hold our meetings on Mondays currently at 10 a.m. They will be live streamed at youtube.com/JCRFPD.
JCRFPD.
@JCRFPD.
Okay, we'll try to write that down and get it on our website right here for you.
So, and if they want to come in person, our meetings will be held at the Merlin Community Park in their community center. Starting the 28th, we'll be out there in the community center in Merlin.
All right. Just one more question here, and I'll throw this out to both of you here, because when I first moved back into Grants Pass decades ago, I lived in the urban growth boundary, and I had a situation where I was a customer of Rural Metro. I moved into the city of Grants Pass right now and felt really safe. And then that catastrophic fire that almost wiped out talent hit.
Yes.
So is that a false feeling of safety by living within the city of Grants Pass? Or should everybody really be advised to take another look at their property?
I think, yeah, I mean, all properties, whether you're in the city limits or not, you should put the, do any type of risk reduction you can on those properties, because it could affect either way. You have a lot of properties that are right on the fringe of, the urban growth boundary area, and there's a lot of vegetation in some of these areas. So if you're, let's say the property next door is a vacant property and it's overgrown and it's full, it's very prone to fire. So getting in and preparing your property and doing the fuels mitigation in your property would help definitely.
All right, Austin, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, using the Alameda fire of 2020 as an example of the worst-case scenario, in my 37 years, that would be one of the rarities, if you will, that that Southwest Oregon is likely to face. But it doesn't mean that it won't happen again, and it could happen anywhere. On that day, I was part of the command staff that was sent over to help with that management of that fire, but those that were left here in Grants Pass also were preparing for the same thing to break out here had the conditions continue. We were dealing with a wind event that was coming out of the east, which is, in our opinion, the reddest of red flag warnings that we could possibly expect to have in that time of year. Late fire season, east winds blowing hot air at the mile per hour that it was. There really isn't a whole lot any fire department or anything you can do. The Alameda burnt not just with the vegetation component, but it went from house to house or building to building. And that can happen in any dynamic. They are a very exposed area over there with the valley, the South Valley of Jackson County, where that wind really gets to chucking through that area. We're a little bit sheltered to some degree through the mountainous terrain around us, but it doesn't mean we won't get an east wind. So it's a matter of time. I don't like to freak anybody out by that. It's just a historical observation that I have with the job that I'm responsible for, to note that the possibility does exist. It can happen to anyone, anywhere, at any time. I just want to make sure that people do take what Mark just mentioned is all you can do is take every precaution at your own property to be prepared for that.
All right. Time is gone right now, Mark. Quickly, what should people take away from today's program?
They should take away the fact that their level of service for their all-hazard fire protection and emergency services has not changed, and they are just as safe today as they were last month.
All right. And quickly, Austin?
We're still kind of early in fire season of 2025. When we have the potential of another event like we had on board Channy, and it could turn out different. I want everybody to understand is that we're going to do our best to be there for the community from today, tomorrow, this summer, and beyond. With every effort that I can do from my position with the people I employ and the neighbors that I've built relationships with to continue with that effort.
All right. To close out the program, I'm going to go back to that immediate release from Mark Jones the day after that last fire broke out and go down here to receive emergency alerts, evacuation notices, and zone updates. Please sign up with the Genesis Protect, formerly known as Zone Haven, protectgenesis.com. That's GNASYS.com. Residents in or near impacted areas should be prepared at all times. And gentlemen.
Actually, if I could add to that. So, when I did that release, I didn't add in that Everbridge is the current one used by the Josephine County Emergency Management. So Everbridge is the one that gives you the citizen alerts.
All right. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much and continue on your valuable pursuits. We want to thank you very much for your attention here today. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show right here on KAJO Radio.
Get ready to...